You are the master of your reality. This is even more true in relation to the government. Democracy doesn't just happen. It takes participation. Governments need participation and feedback from their citizens. Join Rob Hutchinson for Dear Parliament, where you get to understand the issues and engage directly with government. Dear Parliament is every Wednesday at midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of the Dear Parliament Show. I'm Rob Hutchinson, as the intro correctly said. I'm not going to dispute that. And once again, we're talking about issues happening in Parliament. And there's a lot happening in Parliament right now, especially with the cancellation of the budget speech, which was, I think, took everyone by quite a surprise. But of course, it was done for quite interesting reasons, some of which we'll get into a bit later, but all mostly around tax and disagreements that happened within the government of national unity, which is a good thing. There should be disagreements and debates around certain issues, and that's exactly how a democracy should work. However, deadlines need to be met, constitutional mandates need to be met, and the public of South Africa does need to be informed of what government has planned, especially in the financial sector. This, of course, does affect international markets, trading markets, the power of the rand, and so on and so on. When government doesn't produce what they say they're going to do, especially in financial matters, the rand does take a knock, and which it did. It took a bit of a knock. Markets went down. Confidence in South Africa went down as well, which forced the minister to produce an interim budget, an alternative budget, which is still not quite finalized. And that was presented this week. I think it was this week, early this week in Parliament. And well, there's a lot that still has to be debated, and there's a lot that's still missing from that. And it's quite interesting. It comes at a great time when most South Africans, including myself, are dealing with our tax returns. Not a great thing to do, I must say, especially if you're a business owner. You've got to pay company tax, you've got to pay provisional tax, you've got to pay personal tax, and everything just kind of takes its toll. And you sit there kind of wondering, you know, what am I getting out of this, really? You know, what's in it for me? And it's rather terrifying when you think about it. It's, you know, paying so much in tax, and believe me, it's quite a bit that the average South African has to pay, especially if you're a business owner. It's you kind of sit back and go, really? And then you look forward and you go, wow, now there's increases in Eskom, in electricity tariffs. There's so much else happening. I've got so many expenses. What do I do? How do I save? How can I make a profit? How can I continue with my business? But we go forward and we find a way, and we have our say. We debate it with our parliamentarians, and we obviously make our voice heard. Does it matter? Yes, you bet it does. It absolutely does. You do make a difference when you participate and you have your say. Imagine if we didn't. Imagine if everybody just kept quiet. How horrific would that be? Government would just do what they want, and nobody would ever complain. Nobody would say anything, and we would dissolve rapidly into a rather authoritarian regime, which none of us do want. So as I've always said, public participation is vitally important. Even if you think it doesn't matter, it most certainly does. Do not keep quiet. Make your voice heard and get out there and participate. Now, last week we chatted, and all listeners would have enjoyed the show. Last week it was with Kieran Ryan. Was a great prelude to the budget speech, which didn't happen, of course. But if you missed that, please have a look on www.chaifm.com.ca. That's www.chaifm.com, and then have a look at the podcasts and just take a listen to that show. And as promised, Kieran Ryan is joining us again today to chat more about the budget speech that didn't happen. I'm going to rub that in quite a bit. But yes, and of course, a few other issues that have come up in Parliament. There's some questionable policies and proposals that have been put forward. And we'll also chat about cryptocurrency, that evil word that no one seems to understand, but everyone thinks they do understand. And Kieran will be chatting to us. Kieran's somewhat of an expert in cryptocurrency. I'm making great assumptions here, but Kieran is. We've chatted privately and off air quite a bit about crypto. I'm a newbie. I'm terrified of it. No idea what's going on. So Kieran can educate us all listeners. It'll be absolutely wonderful. And on that note, Kieran, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Rob. Thanks for having me back on. How are you doing?
Cannot complain. Like I said, it's been a rough week. Looking at my empty wallet and my empty bank account and shedding a tear, really. Wow.
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, I think it was a bit of a shocker. You know, we did run through what are some of the likely options for the budget, which was then cancelled. I think just an hour after we went off air, the budget was cancelled. Never happened before in South African history, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was all over this 2% increase in VAT and the government and national unity. So, you know, I think the DA being part of that, and I believe as well some of the ANC members themselves were against this. So there's divisions and fault lines appearing all over the place over this. It just reminded me, you know, if you go back to, I think it was in the 1980s when they introduced VAT. Before that, we used to have a sales tax, which was very easy to avoid if you were a business. VAT, because it's levied at each different stage in the process of production or sale, much harder to avoid that. But at the time, it came in at 6%. So we had a sales tax of 5%, if memory serves me correctly.
Oh, GST.
And Baron Duplessis was then finance minister, and he said, okay, we're going to introduce VAT. No more holes in the sales tax system because we've now got VAT. So we've gone from 6% VAT to 15% in the process of 30-something years. Now they want to take it up to 17%. Yeah. And if you look at the, you know, some of the apologetics that are coming through on the press, well, it's not really so bad. You know, look at countries like Ireland and Europe, you know, where it's 25, 27%, 23%. It's all over the place. But this is clearly what the end goal is. Once you have these taxes, and I thought this back when Baron Duplessis came through with the introduction of that, this is just going to creep up and up and up, and that's exactly what's happening. If you compare South Africa to a European company, that's a completely false comparison. We are a developing country with a very, very large proportion of people living below the poverty line, what they define as the poverty line. We have huge unemployment. You cannot run your fiscus in the manner of a developing country with all of the benefits and the welfare system that comes with that. It's simply unaffordable. I think the thing that really struck me about this budget was the lack of self-reflection in the government, that they would propose something like this. It's like, well, you know, where can we go and tax more? And as we discussed last week, you know, South Africa's taxed out. You know, we've hit that point on the Laffer curve where you increase taxes and you're not going to get any more revenue.
Yeah,
that's a proven concept all over the world. We're now in that declining state where people find there's a thing called tax arbitrage. People will move their funds, or they will emigrate, or they will underreport, or they will fudge the system in various different ways. That's kind of what's invited by this. You now have a country where 24% of all wealth created is sucked in by the government. And you raise the point, well, you know, what do I get out of this? And I think that's a question all South Africans are asking themselves.
Oh, totally agree. And well, there's a lot more to it as well. The government has also proposed a increase in the, let's say a more diverse tax-free or VAT-free basket of goods, which they say alleviates the pressure on the poor. But I'm not too convinced about that in any way whatsoever.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Indeed, it doesn't just happen, does it, Kieran? I mean, really, we have to work hard at our democracy, and it seems we have to work harder and harder every day. But yeah, is there hope on the horizon for South Africa, especially concerning what has happened in the past week?
Yeah,
I know that's a broad question.
there's always hope. There's always hope because South Africans are incredibly resilient, and you know they always find a way to survive. Look at what happened during the Eskom grid collapse, and how many. Yeah. Okay, we're going to take our energy concerns into our own hands and solar systems and put in alternative energy systems. And it happened at the business level and it happened at the residential level as well. That's the kind of path we're on at the moment. The next thing that we're going to probably have to solve is a water problem. You know, at the breakdown of municipalities and metros, water is going to be the next big issue that I think confronts us. And you already start seeing that, you know, people putting in these JoJo tanks and reverse osmosis systems to filter the water, putting in boreholes. And as soon as this starts happening, of course, an article comes out, it's on MoneyWeb in the last week, saying, you know, you could go to jail for an unauthorized borehole. There are laws and you have to respect the laws, but I want to get to that in a minute. It's about I think we're at the point of overreach by the state. And there is a pushback that is happening and it's a very positive one. It's happening in the courts. It's happening with public participation, such as your platform, Rob, which really, you know, does alert because I'm on your email list and you do alert me to these laws, but
I try.
some of the regulations, just go back to this budget in a minute, but where is the evidence of the state taking any pain whatsoever? And we discussed this last year that there's 1.3 million public sector workers. The average, they earn 50% more than the private sector. If you're in the public sector, you're part of the elite. Now, there's an implied allegiance there to the ANC. So this is very much a political move. It's not it's not happening in a vacuum. This is done deliberately. It happens in, you know, socialist states where you basically buy your votes in various clever ways.
Yes.
And that is one way that is doing it. But no evidence in this budget of any serious trimming of spending. The spending that increase that was proposed is about 1% more. Okay, so that's below inflation. It's good. It's not bad. But the point is that you cannot keep on taxing people and expect to increase revenue. There's a protest that's going on at the moment. And look at some of the new regulations that are being proposed. There's transport regulations. There's the National Health Insurance Act, which is going to be catastrophic for the South African finance system. Never mind the basic state of democracy in our country, because you're going to have the state determining what kind of treatments you'll get and what they'll pay for and not pay for. And then we'll be basically muscling out private sector medical funds out of areas that the state provides.
Yeah. I just saw an interesting article. About, well, it wasn't just an article. There's actually a bill out for public comment right now, which will affect private and medical aid quite severely. It's about limiting charges and what private healthcare officials can charge. It's about creating a lower income bracket medical aid system, which medical aids will have to implement, and standardizing costs across the board. But the problem is that it's just going to interfere way too much. The minister actually said that it's an interim step towards the NHI, because they know they can't implement. I think we also chatted about that briefly, or touched on it briefly last week. So they've introduced this because they know that the NHI is going to take too long. And it's almost a capture of the private medical aids and how they function and how how they roll out their benefits and so on, which is one step towards a taking over the entire industry. And I think I've said this from the beginning, is that the only way the state can implement the NHI is through sort of covert expropriation of the private medical aid funds, fund managers, which makes perfect sense to me. This, no, the state will never have capacity to do this. So it's either going to have to be outsourced, which I don't see them doing that, or it's going to have to be an immediate setup where using existing systems, creating severe regulations and restrictions for private medical aids, and then or private healthcare as well, and then just implementing the system by taking over what they're doing now. And this new bill and this new proposal does seem to do that. That, among many other things that you've already mentioned, create quite worrisome times ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to see how this NHI will roll out, just take a look at the track record of the health sector, the government-run public sector health system, and you'll get an idea how this. Well, why should it be any different? Well, you know, having all these new funds, which Discovery says it will cost about $800 billion, which is just a phenomenal amount of money per year to run this thing, and just go and look at a public sector hospital and see if that's the kind of quality of healthcare that you're going to get. Why would it be any different? Then you go to a Netcare hospital and you see, okay, this is how the private sector runs it. And it's pretty clean and it's efficient and it seems to function. So there you straight away, every South African with eyes can see that this is what's going to happen. And then how is this really going to be paid for? Well, they say it's going to be paid for through, you know, economies of scale and better buying, because you're going to have this fund, this NHI fund, which is going to have massive amounts of money. So they'll be able to negotiate better prices for certain things. Yeah, no doubt that will happen. But I think one has to be suspicious of any encroachment of the state into new territory. If you allow a new foothold to be taken into a market which is already functioning okay, then I think you're opening up the door for more and more of that encroachment. Just on that point, I mean, there's a few other bills that I wanted to mention. There's the public procurement bill, which is basically, it's what Saikalicha, the Afrikaans Business Organization, calls part of the third BEE wave. Now, you know, there was a long period of time when people were, you know, were a bit embarrassed to discuss this. But this third BE wave is very, very concerning, because it's now going to creep down from the big organizations, you know, who are already compliant and they've got the shareholders and they've got, you know, all of the, they tick all the boxes. But it's going to go down to the small business level. Ultimately, you're going to have the government deciding what business can operate. You're basically going to get a license to survive as a business. And these quotas, they're going to tell you who your shareholders can be. They can tell you who you can buy from. They're going to tell you how many employees of what race. All of this is, you know, more and more race-based regulation. And I understand at the back of that, every one of these laws is an additional tax. We haven't even discussed this, the impact. From the budget point of view, this is another tax that's going to be imposed on business. You've got the Small Business Act, same thing. The Petroleum Resources Act. These are things that are starting to creep in. And one of the worst is the Climate Change Act.
Yeah.
Where you're going to have, I think this falls under the Department of Trade and Industry or the Environmental Ministry, or there's a collaboration there. But basically, they're going to tell you, okay, you now have to give us a report. You, small business, you got that little restaurant down on the corner. You're going to have to tell us what your carbon footprint is.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And so you're going to have to employ somebody who knows how to do that. So there's going to be this whole graft that is going to go on where it's going to set one small business off against another. You're going to have companies that benefit and the companies that will be that won't comply, and therefore they will have penalties. And this is just more and more encroachment of the state, and I think it's got to be resisted.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that. I've kept an eye on that for quite a while. it goes quite deep. They're actually talking about introducing the carbon credit system within that new climate change bill, which will control how companies can actually trade their carbon credits. So you'll be allocated a certain number of credits. Companies will be given certain leeway, certain privileges, depending on what their status is, and that's also undefined. But it'll create a trading platform, and they talk about a trading platform on it as well, where companies can go and trade and buy new credits, sell credits, and so on. It's literally a rewrite of markets and how money is transferred and so on. But what it does is it allows big emitters and wealthy companies to buy more credits and trade from other small companies. That's completely counterproductive in achieving its goals, whether those goals are questionable as it stands or not. But it's definitely not set out to do what it is and address the problem of climate change due to man's CO2 emissions, or should I say alleged problem. Because there's a lot of science that goes both ways on that one. But it's definitely another form of taxation. And as you say, audits will have to be done. Reports will have to be submitted along with tax returns. And it will no doubt be managed by SARS themselves and all linked together. And yes, the environmental minister does have final say in it. And the environmental department and ministry is becoming the go-to department for all the other ministries. Everybody, if you introduce something as the Minister of Energy or Minister of Agriculture or Sports and Recreation, and the environmental minister has to assess it and give their approval on that and include environmental impact assessment reports and so on, no matter what it is. So that's going to become the most powerful decision-making body in South Africa, which in itself is quite wrong. And it'll become more important than budget. And I suspect it's all to do with global policy. In fact, we know it's all to do with global policy and access to the United Nations Green Fund, which is standing, I think, at about $300 billion per annum, which is going to be made available to countries, developing countries, by international, by first world developed countries, which I think that itself is a pipe dream. I mean, we've seen Trump pulling out of UN and WHO and all sorts of things there. So it's really pie in the sky kind of stuff. But it does impact South Africans. I mean, significant expense on readying your business and the auditing reports and administration. It's ridiculous. And just another, as you say, stealth tax on South Africans.
Yeah, and I think that there's a confliction, you know, where you have a country that has got a grid which is falling over. And we've seen this now in the last week. We thought, oh, you know, load shedding is behind us. Well, lo and behold, it comes back again because you have the simultaneous failure of a number of units at different Eskom power stations. Well, probably we need to factor that into our future planning as well. And this idea that we are going to decarbonize when we don't have energy security, and what kind of energy security do we want? And I think nuclear is going to have to, well, nuclear will definitely be part of the solution. There's been massive investment in renewables over the last 5 years. But that doesn't really assist too much on the baseload. You know, when power is really needed, it's very much dependent on the sun and it's very much dependent on the wind. Nuclear is by far the cheapest. It costs, Kuberg, for example, they're producing at R1.13 per kilowatt hour. Renewables are about R2.20 and coal is at about R3.50. I forget the figures exactly, but the very powerful business case for nuclear. But then you run into the arguments. There are so many very closeted vested interests in this entire energy debate. There are those, you know, who want the decarbonization first, you know, to hell with the stability of the grid. They have some sort of cockamamie idea of about how this thing could be stabilized with renewables. But I think any serious energy analyst will tell you that, you know, unless you get your baseload rock solid, and one way to do that is actually these small modular nuclear reactors where you can produce
SMRs.
SMRs, you can produce, you know, 100 megawatts up to 300 megawatts. You can have a very localized grid where, a business park, for example, where you don't have to connect to the ESCOM transmission grid. You can have micro nuclear now producing like 10, 20, 30 megawatts. There's magnificent advances being made. Other countries in Africa are starting to look at that. Egypt's already got one, 4,000 megawatt nuclear plant. Ghana's looking at it. Zimbabwe is looking at it. Limpopo is looking at it.
Limpopo. And Limpopo. Here we are in South Africa still trying to fix Medupi. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, no. You kind of got to look at government priorities. And who's advising these people? Really, come on. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The government doesn't seem to be acting in the best interest of South Africans or South African businesses in any way whatsoever, especially when it comes to power. But I agree with you, Kieran. I absolutely agree. I think it's, in fact, I know it's invested interests there. And we've seen who the major players are in the renewable sector, or should I say the major player, a single individual, which is our President Ramaphosa's brother-in-law, owns literally about 76% of all renewable projects in South Africa. Mm. No coincidence as to how he landed those in any way whatsoever. And you know, there's immense money to be made out of that at taxpayer expense once again. I see him as the next Elon Musk when it comes to global wealth, when it does happen. It's really happening, but yeah, it's just counterproductive to where we should be going, especially following global trends. We've seen a disbandment of wind power in most of Europe already.
Yeah.
People shutting down these things. Yet we've seen a massive increase. I think there's about 1,000 new wind turbines planned for the Free State alone. In the Northern Cape. And they're going up like, I was driving through the other day and block off the whole road. These things are massive. They were casting tracking just one of the replacement blades. I had no idea these things were this huge. Mm. And of course, they're made out of fiberglass. It's an environmental disaster. Yeah, that's just looming. But thousands of them are planned just for that area, while Europe is dismantling them and moving towards other sources such as nuclear, which, by the way, is the cleanest form of energy you can possibly get. But Kieran, let's chat up. We have a quick break and then pay the bills, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
With Rob Hutchinson and Kieran today. Kieran, where were we going? I was waffling on about nuclear and about waste of money renewables in the Northern Cape. But what I'm really interested in, Kieran, is you mentioned crypto and stable coins. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so I mean, you said I'm the world's greatest expert along those lines.
Well, in my world, in my small world.
Let me just clarify. I write on crypto for MoneyWeb, and I have a weekly podcast on. It's called the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. So I do keep up to date on what's happening in that space, and yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't really understand it. What is the role of Bitcoin in all of this and all of these thousands and thousands of other coins? If I can just summarize my view on that very quickly, and I'll come to stable coins, is Bitcoin is a solid technology. It's gone over the last 12 years from a few cents to about $100,000. Okay, it's down at today, the last week. It's about $90,000. The reason being, it was conceived as a form of sound money, that there will only ever be 21 million coins in issue. And there's a process called mining, which is basically mining, as in you have these dedicated computers, or what they call nodes, that go about and they try to solve a cryptographic problem. And this happens every 10 minutes, by the way, and you've got tens of thousands of these nodes, computers, that are trying to solve this every 10 minutes. And those that are successful get rewarded with Bitcoin. So that's how new Bitcoin is issued. But there will only ever be 21 million. And so the adoption wave has picked up, because now you've got institutions that are getting involved. You've got exchange traded funds. So if you want to own Bitcoin, you can do it through an ETF, an exchange traded fund. And there are several of them out there. The same thing has happened with Ethereum, which is the second biggest cryptocurrency. There are now exchange traded funds on that as well. Its performance is not quite as strong, and it would not be considered sound money, because although there are limits on how much new Ethereum can be issued, the coin itself is called Ether or ETH. It does have an inflationary aspect built into it, whereas Bitcoin does not. There will never be any more than 21 million. So that's the enthusiasm for Bitcoin. And by the way, there are companies that are now like MicroStrategy, which is listed on the NASDAQ, and a company here in South Africa by the name of AltVest Capital, an alternative investment company, that have adopted Bitcoin as their strategic reserve asset. In other words, all of the spare cash that they get, they don't store it in rands or dollars. They put it into Bitcoin. Wow. And
it's not quite volatile.
It's very volatile. Yeah. It's very volatile.
But quite a risky thing to do there.
Yeah, but volatility is a feature of any new technology. So you should expect that. And it's not going to be a smooth ride to riches. No, it's going to be bumpy. But I wanted to bring up this, and I discussed this with you briefly off air last week, stable coins. Stable coins are a version of cryptocurrency that are backed by real world assets. So let me give you an example. The biggest stable coin is called Tether, T-E-T-H-E-R, or USDT is its abbreviation. Yeah. Now, Tether is a fascinating story, and it's fascinating for a number of reasons. First of all, it made last year, with 100 employees, it made more money than BlackRock, the biggest fund manager in the world. It made more money than JP Morgan, one of the biggest banks in the world. It made about 1.6 billion. That was in the last quarter. Sorry, it made 1.6 billion. So it's about $7 billion in profits this little micro startup has made.
Wow.
Their
money. That's
they make their money because they take, first of all, the amount of transactions that are cleared in Tether per year.
So they take a percentage of your transactions.
A very small percentage. It's actually a tiny percentage. If you're transferring money out of South Africa to an account abroad, you're paying between 2 and 5% in forex fees. Yeah. Uh-huh. This is why stablecoins are so attractive. They will take it's generally less than a percent. Tether's certainly taking a lot less than that, but there's other middlemen along the way. The exchanges will take a little bit. But you're able to, if I wanted to transfer a stable US dollar stable coin to you, you'd have it in 2 minutes, and it would cost me less than a percent. So Africans have kind of woken up to this, and I just did some research on what's happened to African currencies over the last year. So now you're in Nigeria. The currency there is the Naira. It depreciated by 104% in 2024. The Malawian kwacha is down 67% in 2024.
Wow.
The Ethiopian birr, B-I-R-R, is down 51%. The Sudanese pound, the South Sudanese pound, is down 60%. The Zimbabwean zig, the gold backed zig, is down 47%. Now, that's an interesting story in its own right. If this is gold-backed, surely it should have some stability. And so some people, you know, in the crypto community went to the Zimbabwean government and said, look, if you really want to stabilize your currency, let an external auditor come and verify that gold exists. and the Zimbabwean government turned them down. If they turn them down, you know they're lying. Okay, there's this whole thing that's happening at Fort Knox at the moment in the United States.
Yeah, where, same thing.
It's Elon Musk and Donald Trump, and I think Ron Paul and Rand Paul, there's a bunch of them who want to go in there and see if the gold still exists, because these guys have not subjected themselves to an audit, I think, in 40 years. Oh, I think wow. It was in the 1980s they last had an audit. So
they haven't gone in there yet. That's interesting.
They haven't gone in there. Yeah. I guess there's, you know, they've got some pretty strong security, at the, you know, and people who've got maybe some secrets. But this is where you're at. So I just want to finish my point about the stable coin. What is attractive about Tether, and there are other stable coins like USDC, which is issued by a company called Circle. They're one-to-one backed by U.S. dollars. Not exactly U.S. dollars. They would include treasuries, and they would include near cash type of financial instruments, but mostly dollars. So there's a lot of, you know, there have been a lot of questions about, well, how stable that is. But the point is, there is an audit that is happening on both of these stable coins that shows they're one-to-one backed. They're 100% backed. You talk about the South African banking system where you're putting your deposits there and you're earning an interest. Yeah, it's pretty stable, but their backing is only about 10, 15%. You know, and so they rely on, you know, the Basel III, you know, the banking system in order to maintain different risk profiles for different types of assets. So the point about a stable coin is it's very, very stable, and it's very cheap to transmit, and you can actually earn interest on it, what they call staking. Africans have woken up to this in Nigeria. They said, well, you know, our currency there has depreciated 100%. You know, if we put our money into stable coins, we protect ourselves. Same in Malawi, Ethiopia, South Sudan, and in South Africa. A lot of people are starting to wake up to the fact that you can dollarize your company, you can dollarize your business and your personal financial scene by converting from rands into US dollar stable coins.
Wow. Well, that's quite something. I think we should definitely investigate that. And I'm sure you'll have information on how companies can do that, which I'm hoping you will reveal straight after the break.
Okay.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Great. And Kieran, I was wondering if stablecoin is as unstable as my internet connection currently is. I'll keep getting flashes up here, internet connection unstable. Is it really stable?
Yeah, there are ways that you can check that. There's a website called coinmarketcap.com. You can go there, and they do publish the reserve assets for all of these different companies. It's a CoinMarketCap is owned by Binance, which is the world's largest crypto exchange. And they, because of all the controversies and the thefts and the and stuff like that has happened in the crypto community, there's this push for more transparency, which is a very, very good thing. But the point I wanted to make about the stablecoin, are they stable? Yes, because you can transfer that anywhere in the world. It'll take a couple of minutes. You don't take like 2-3 days as it is through the banking system. But the one of the important benefits of this, I think, is it's in a way it's a threat to existing political structures, because if you remove the currency, the domestic currency, from the grip of the governments in all of these different countries, and you now you're putting it in the hands of the US government. If you're dollarizing yourself and you're dollarizing your company, you are then trusting Donald Trump and the American state will do a fairly good job. But history suggests that it is the strongest currency around. I would say Bitcoin over the longer term will be stronger, but the dollar's not going anywhere. It's going to be around for quite a while. But what it has done is it's opened up opportunities for Africans to transact in dollars, convert from local currency to stable coins. And you, by the way, you asked where do you do that? Well, you do that through any crypto exchange. The biggest ones would be Luno, Valor, Altcoin Trader, 88. That's 80, the number 80 with the letters 8. And there are a few others. You can buy these stable coins there, and when you open an account there, you get a digital wallet where you store these coins. The point I want, why I wanted to bring this up is because I do see this as a very unconfronted threat to the existing political orders, because it's going to take away the power of central banks in all of these countries to start recklessly printing money to fund stupid government programs. Because people say, you know what, I'm opting out. I might live in Nigeria or Ethiopia, but I am, for financial purposes, I'm in the United States. And you can do that today with crypto.
Wow, that's great. I've played around a little bit, but nothing too great. Lost way more money than I've made.
Were you trading, though? Were you trading or just hoarding?
Just hoarding, as you do. So if you hoard onto it, the value drops, and I saw it drop down to like below 40. And I was like, oh, no, we'll just cash it all in.
Yeah, it's very volatile. Look, anybody getting into this, understand the volatility. The risks are extreme. I have the viewpoint that I take a 10-year view, and I don't sell.
Right. Okay. So that's sage advice then. Yeah. It's a long-term investment, definitely not a get-rich-quick scheme.
Don't put everything into it, for heaven's sake. You can put a small percentage in. Look, there are a lot of people in the crypto community who are all in, 100%. They understand the volatility. They're prepared to live with it. If you do some of the forecasts on Bitcoin, they by 2030, the price prediction ranges from $250,000 to $1 million.
Wow.
Okay, they're predictions, and they should not really be believed. But
if you
understand the technology, then it's something to start paying attention to for sure.
Right, right. And spending it is that as easy as it is? I know there was some talk from Binance about a card, like a spending card, which didn't quite ever materialize, like a credit card or something else like that, which will make
a
lot easier.
Pick and Pay and Checkers will take, if you have Bitcoin, you can spend it there. You can buy your groceries with it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic news. There you go. Maybe I can scrape some together and buy myself some dinner tonight after. After all, I've just given SARS everything I have.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, by the way, SARS being the only government department that really functions well after all of these dead losses we've been discussing earlier. Clearly, there's one department that really functions.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know. It functions, I think, too well. But, it's quite sad. Kieran's been wonderful as usual. It really, really, really has. Yeah, we should make this a regular feature and talk more about crypto. I'd love to learn more about it and maybe become a bit of a successful trader, or be able to at least buy something from the local grocer. It would be absolutely wonderful. Let's catch up again sometime soon, listeners. If you missed it, please go on to www.chaifm.com. And download it and listen to the podcast and others, and make some suggestions as well. Send us a WhatsApp, send us an SMS. Details are all available there, and we can chat about anything that you do wish. Kieran, thanks very much.
Thanks, Rob.
We'll catch you next time. And listeners, remember to stay democratically engaged, active, and responsible. Ciao for now.